Everyone, Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast with my co-host Evan Damerl. On today's show for Tuesday, July 12th, we're looking back at the Cavs extending their own draft picks amid what is happening and not happening with Colin Sexton. Segment 1, the Kyrie Irving extension. Segment 2, the Tristan Thompson extension. And segment 3, why the Cavs historically have not extended many of their own draft picks and how Colin Sexton is stuck in the middle. I want to thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music heard on the way in, at least in audio form, is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Spotify or Apple Music. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation's Fear the Sword. My co-host is Evan Damerl, primarily at Facebook's Write Down Euclid. Evan, today we're going to talk about Cavs rookie extensions. The one I will note is that we are not going to talk about LeBron James back in 2006 because that was an old CBA, that was a very different circumstance, so we're going to start with Kyrie Irving. But I want to note, the Cavs have only extended four picks of their own in the Dan Gilbert era. Kyrie Irving, Tristan Thompson, Darius, and LeBron. LeBron was a Gordon Gund draft pick, so the only picks of the Gilbert era they've extended are Kyrie, Thompson, and Darius. Those are guys picked under the Dan Gilbert era.
Yeah, Colin Sexton. Jared Allen doesn't fall under that umbrella necessarily.
Yes, because, yes. So that's where we're at with this. Don't know what's going to happen with Colin Sexton, but Evan, let's start with Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, full disclosure, folks, when I opened tonight's script, or today's script, I should say, and I see segment named Kyrie Irving, I thought, Chris, are we really going to kick this can of worms? But Kyrie at the time felt like a no-brainer of an extension, and obviously with the power of hindsight, it became a no-brainer of an extension for the Cavs. There was obviously some questions about him, especially with, like, the Dion Waiters side of things too, but he was a no hesitation. High level extension. It's not quite the max, but it had a player option, as you noted. It was 5 years, $90 million at the time, but like, pretty decent money for a guard on your team, and a young guard. I had a lot of unproven certainties about him too.
Yeah, so this is and obviously a different era of Kyrie Irving. Signed in 2014.
He didn't open his mind's eye yet, is what Chris is saying.
Well, at least had been known. So signed in 2014, this is the summer of the Wiggins pick. This is hiring David Blatt. This deal was signed before LeBron had come back. I went back and read some of the write-ups on it, and then some of them had noted in context that they'd also like dumped Tyler Seller and Serge Karasev and cleared cap space to maybe also bring in LeBron the same summer they gave Kyrie this extension. This was a 5-year, as Evan noted, $90 million contract, so not quite the max for this time. Also had a player option for last year. If you read the reporting on it, Evan, when I went back and did this, it seems like, number one, there was the Dan Gilbert tweet that was like, this is a max. We have him for the next six years. Technically, that was kind of true, but like doesn't totally pass like the fact checking.
Yeah,
Kyrie basically gave up like $7 million to have a player option in the last year. Could have had $7 million more guaranteed, but it gets the player option. And it's also just like funny how like this wasn't really realistically like that long ago. It's like 8 years, and like Darius Garland's contract for 5 years, the 5-year max he got is $100 million more. Like,
yeah, just wild. TV money changes a lot of things, man. I think the NBA has grown quite a bit since Kyrie signed that extension with Cleveland many, many moons ago. Yeah, it doesn't feel that long ago. I do remember like the memes and the videos Kyrie was like posting on social at the time when he signed the extension with the Cavs. But more than anything, I think it's just when you look at like Garland, if you want to draw a parallel between Garland and Kyrie, like these were both deals the Cavs kind of wrapped up right away into free agency, and to indicate like, hey Kyrie, hey Darius, you are arguably the face of our franchise, in Kyrie's case, or in Darius's case, one of the three pillars that hold up this franchise and also one of the key faces. But we view you as our franchise guard, and we're going to treat you and pay you as such, and they took care of it right away. So, like, that's just kind of where the through line is between those two, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And then, as you noted, this gets done because it's a no-brainer. He was number one overall pick. He's coming off a 20-6 season. He played a career-high number of games that previous season up to that point.
He was not a fan of Mike Brown, but...
No, but, like, look, that was a weird hire, and there's a lot of context of how weird the Cavs were at this singular point in time. Evan, I think the lesson here is that, like, Kyrie was, like, the catalyst of what they wanted to build, so they did it. Obviously, like, the LeBron thing shifts this, and then Kyrie becomes one of the dual engines, like the B engine to LeBron's A engine of them winning a title and being really good for those couple seasons. But, like, he's coming off these three seasons. You're betting he's going to get better. You give up a little bit of team control, obviously, the back end of the deal, but you had a lot of control on Kyrie going forward, and you're betting on him getting better as your number one pick just 3 years before. Like, this is the kind of thing where it's just like you stare at it, you look at it in retrospect, and it's like, of course he got this money. Like, this isn't a surprise. And when we're thinking about these, this is in the box of, like, no-brainers. It gets done. The player gets basically the most amount of money possible, and we move on.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. And I think also, like you said, for context, Kyrie signed this extension before the Cavs necessarily had, like, a firm plan to bring LeBron back. I think the option originally was Gordon Hayward. And if you remember when we did the book reading of Return of the King with from McMenamin, Wendy, and others, that they actually had Gordon Hayward, like, touring the Cleveland practice facility and, like, talking with the front office when LeBron gave indication that he wants to come back. And they kind of politely saw the end of the meeting with Gordon, but didn't really follow up with him on it, because Hayward many years later joked when he and Kyrie on the Celtics saying, like, hey, we were supposed to play together in Cleveland. But obviously a little murkiness to that. The Jazz could have offered any offer sheet that
he was restricted and all that, so it complicated it.
So a little complicated there, but I think that was... And also, just for context again, like, they just drafted Andrew Wiggins, and David Blatt was hired with the notion that, hey, you're going to be coaching this pretty young team of Kyrie Irving, Deion Waiters, Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Bennett, even though we kind of knew he was a bit of a bust, but there's still hope. Tyler Zeller, Alonzo G, so on and so forth. But then the Cavs started kind of shedding salary, obviously, to make some maneuvers to clear the runway for one King James and Kevin Love. But this, like you said, when we've said a few times, this was a no-brainer of a signing. Kyrie was coming off a 26 season. They almost made the playoffs that year, because I remember I was interning in Indiana at the time, and they lost to the Phoenix Suns, like, really late in the season. That eliminated them from the playoffs. But Kyrie was really showcasing in his game that he was able to elevate a supporting cast, especially, like, a mentally checked out Luol Deng and Spencer Hawes, who was, like, good at times, but also just objectively terrible on defense, too. But good at times on offense, but, like, Kyrie was the catalyst. He was the engine that ever made everything work and go. And then obviously just, like, the overabundance of young players around him. It is an interesting, like, thought exercise, like, what could have been if LeBron didn't come back, like, with the fighter pilot and Kyrie and everybody else. But
it would have been interesting.
But Kyrie, like, in terms of free agency decisions, this felt like a no-brainer at the time. Like, I think there were obviously concerns in just terms of health and, like, can he elevate a team and is he a true point guard, et cetera, et cetera. But like you said, he comes back. He's, like, honestly the perfect co-star for LeBron, other than maybe that one season in the bubble with Anthony Davis. But, like, you have, like, tangible evidence, because Dwayne Wade's body started to break down in the Heatles era too. That this was a pretty successful run for the Cavs, and Kyrie is kind of the catalyst behind it. And also, I think maybe the financial structure of his contract also made things a little easier for Cleveland when they had to make some bigger signings down the pipeline.
I mean, most importantly, like, they just threw the money at the very good player, and
they had a certain commodity in front of them. They had drafted and developed, and they threw money at him because he was worth every penny, because there is still room for him to grow, and clearly 2 years later, he helped them win a championship. So,
yeah, this, you were betting on Kyrie here. You're betting on the production you saw getting better. That's, I think, the lesson of this. We'll do story time in August when we have, like, nothing else to talk about. But I weirdly have, like, a very firm memory of where I was when I found out Spencer Hawes, like, when that came through, like, the Woj bomb came through, because Trevor Magnotti called me and like I had to go into a class where I couldn't use my phone. But maybe like we'll do like Weird Trade reflection time in August when we have nothing else to talk about.
We'll bring, we'll bring Father Trevor on to recant the story, too, because a lot's changed for Trevor since we last had him on.
Yeah, think about all the weird trades we could talk about. We could talk about, like, Luol Deng. We talk about
and how Evan bought a jersey for it, but...
Talk about, like, the Andrew Bynum standing ovation he got during that when he checked in the season opener against the Nets that season he was a Cavalier. Like, there's a lot of, like, weird stuff we could really dive into in this era that might be worth some
odd stuff. We're bringing back Mike Brown and saving face on that, then firing him immediately after. I mean, David Blatt is just fascinating in general, but this is a contract episode, and... When you look at guys like Kyrie Irving, this is a no-brainer signing. And, yeah, you didn't offer him the full max, despite what Dan Gilbert said, but you offered him something pretty darn close to it in the end. Because that, I think, like Chris noted, like Kyrie sacrificed his $7 million to have financial flexibility at the end of his contract. So he can make the decision and maybe pull the plug on Cleveland if he wasn't feeling it at that point, if he was still here.
Bingo. Which did happen. All right, after the break, though, we're going to talk about Tristan Thompson, whose contract played out very differently than Curry. Same draft class, obviously, both were on the 2016 title team, but that one functioned differently, and I think that's the one, Evan, that if we're going to look at lessons for now, that's almost the one that appeals to me more in thinking about this. But first, going to tell everyone about our friends at Built Bar. Built Bar Brownie Chunk Built Bars are great, but guess what? They've given coconut Brownie Chunk Puffs the coconut Brownie Chunk Bars the puff treatment. That's right. The coconut brownie chunk Built Bar flavors you love in a deliciously chewy marshmallow covered in 100% real chocolate. It's just like a fluffy cloud of coconut brownie goodness. But stop drooling and listen. These are good for you. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and all delicious. The brownie chunk puffs are only here for a limited time, so go to Built.com now to make sure you don't miss out. They're going fast because they taste amazing. All Built Bars are made with collagen protein, so which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. Eat something that tastes good and is good for you. The best part about Built Puffs is, of course, that they taste amazing, but you can enjoy them guilt-free because they're actually good for you. They are the perfect treat, perfect when you've got a craving, you need to satisfy your sweet tooth, or if you need a quick, healthy snack, they are an excellent source of protein. Delicious coconut, rich sweet brownie, creamy marshmallow. Stop fantasizing. Get to Built.com to order your box of coconut brownie chunk puffs right now. Go to Built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off your order. Again, the promo code is LOCKED15. All right, we're back here in Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris. That is Evan. Let's talk about Tristan Thompson. So, Evan, this one just played out very differently than Kyrie's. Thompson does not get his deal done the year before or in the summer leading into his restricted free agency. This is, again, akin more to the Colin Sexton situation that we're seeing now. We'll see if it drags on that long, but this didn't get done right away. No. He doesn't sign his deal until October 21st of 2015. He missed all of preseason and all of training camp. Going back and reading about this when we were prepping for this episode was a reminder that Thompson and his agency, which is Clutch, also Conflict's agency, also was Darius Garland's agency, also the Rod's agency,
also J.R. Smith's agency,
also Jordan Clarkson's agency, they played out their leverage and just said, we're going to like let this go as long as possible. We're going to get what he wants. They got him 5 years, $82 million, every penny guaranteed. Brian Windhorst, the god himself, reported at the time that it was a higher number than executives around the league expected him to get. That's from his ESPN write-up on this deal. Thompson, according to Windhorst, wanted a max contract of 5 years and $94 million or 3 years and $53 million to sign. The Cavs had previously offered 5 years, $80 million, and then the fall before this, Thompson had turned down $4 and $50 million. The Cavs paid a big tax bill for this. They had LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love. They had a window to go for it. I think the key here, Evan, is that there was no replacing Tristan Thompson, and then he goes on to be a really key part of the 2016 title team. But like ultimately, maybe he didn't get every penny he wanted, but he got a ton of money, and the Cavs also just like didn't have a way to replace him and had LeBron leveraging for him publicly as well.
So Tristan Thompson is a bit of an interesting case study because he was at his core like the ultimate role player for that shit, those championship Cavs teams and just those four teams that made the finals 4 years in a row. But you can obviously make the argument like Windhorst had like many executives around the league were surprised the Cavs paid that much for him. But like what Thompson did, like watch him against the Chicago Bulls in the first year LeBron was back in the playoffs. Like he eviscerated Chicago on the offensive boards and gave Cleveland so many second chance opportunities. He was key in dismantling the Celtics and the Hawks at different junctures too, like made Al, mm-hmm. like that's where the Joker Al Horford became his son kind of situation, where Tristan Thompson just ate him apart on the glass. Like Thompson did so much and was such a key and integral piece on defense and also at times on offense for the Cavs, just working with Kyrie and K Love and LeBron and JR and just kind of what they've assembled all together, that it was obviously a little surprising if there was a little bit of sticker shock. But I think that was Rich Paul's argument, though, was Thompson has always been like a solid role player, but he is vital for your team's overall success because Mozgov didn't he have the knee issues in the championship era, the first the championship year. So like that's a Mozgov started to break down. They brought in Sasha Kaun, who wasn't able to do much if anything for the Cavs. Like the Cavs
he was not around, did not matter.
The Cavs were not equipped at the big spot because of how they like structured their contracts on their cap table, that Love, LeBron and Kyrie just took up the majority of their cap sheet. And that's just kind of how you look at it. If you're Rich Paul, like that's your counter argument. Say like, listen, Tristan makes a lot of contributions on and makes a lot of winning plays for the Cavs. He is extremely underrated. He makes a lot of like the lunch pail hard nose plays like that just go under unappreciated, like unless like you live, breathe and eat this Cavs team and like really like knows like, okay, this guy's really good. He's also a very competent switch defender, as we came to learn at times as well. But in terms of just like a through line of him and Colin, I guess, like that's where you can kind of like the argument breaks down, where like, well, we can talk about that in the final segment, but like that was the argument for Tristan. And maybe it was a little bit of an overpay of what the Cavs were wanting to pay. Like they offered 5 years, $80 million, like you noted. And then in the end, it was 5 years, $82 million. So it was $2 million more than what they initially wanted to pay. But if you are Rich Paul and the Cavs, you maximize your leverage, like you said, and they had a pretty solid argument when it came to what he had. Plus, also LeBron using the media to apply public pressure to the front office made things a little harder on Cleveland, too.
Yeah, I think like what stands out in retrospect here is that like Thompson could not have been reasonably replaced.
No, that's what I was getting at. Is like Mozgov was breaking down and Kaun was not going to give you that. You cannot play Kevin Love at the five because they tried that in LeBron's last year and it didn't work.
No, like Thompson was this offensive rebounding machine. The energy level had never been higher with him. And like they don't win the 2016 title without what he does in the finals. Like just there's just no way it happens.
Even in that Eastern Conference run, they wouldn't have won so convincingly at times without Tristan, like just being the glue guy.
Yeah, like we remember all of the three-point shooting. And like I think obviously Channing Frye and others had a really big impact. But like Thompson had his own niche, and like he ended up finding the most success he had in his career versus like finding that niche versus expanding his game. Like Evan, do you remember the I like miss his writing because he works for the Clippers now immensely, so this isn't like laughing at him, but like you remember the Lee Jenkins Tristan Thompson story about like Tristan's gonna switch hands and learn how to shoot, and like that never happened.
Bro, that was the fun fact on NBA 2K for the longest time, that Tristan Thompson switched his shooting hands at the free throw line to make him a better free throw shooter, because I remember that going into like his sophomore or third season, like that was like the big storyline because there wasn't much else to talk about when it came to the Cavs.
Yes. So he gets paid for being in his niche, and there's just like all of this leverage, I think, pushing him to get like again, not the full $94 million max, but like $82 million, 5 years fully guaranteed. Like, that's a pretty reasonable contract. And, like, LeBron and, like, there's all of this stuff. There's probably some stuff behind the scenes we don't fully know, whatever. That, I think, also makes him unique in that, like, it doesn't feel as if in the market right now for a restricted free agent or where the Cavs are at. I mean, like, maybe this will change closer to the season and, like, media day could be uncomfortable, all of that. Like, it's, this is the Thompson thing was, like, hanging out there and, like, then you had, like, people with a ton of power on the team talking about it, and like I don't like that also just like pushes your hand a little bit if you're David Griffin at that time. And I would love to, like, he'll never, like, it'd be impossible to, like, for maybe, like, if he's ever not the Cavs president of basketball operations and like goes to the media route, which I don't even do, this would be like a thing I would want to Kobe. I'm like, what was it like being in this situation when it's like you have this negotiation that is dragging on into the close to the season for a guy your team needs, but you're trying to also, like, figure out the finances of it. And like this team at the time was the second highest roster, most expensive roster of all time. The only there was a Nets, only one Nets roster, which is like the KG Paul Pierce team and stuff, that was more expensive than this. Right? Like that was the truth at the time. And obviously the Warriors now spend a bunch of money and stuff, but like this was a very, very expensive basketball team, and like managing that is weird.
It really is interesting to think about. I know Griff, at least publicly during his time in the media, said the one contract he regretted giving out was J.R. Smith's extension because J.R. stopped trying as hard in his eyes after he signed that on the dotted line, and I think there is some evidence of that, but I stand J.R. Smith. I love him dearly as a fan.
Another moment I will never forget is the last time, this is, again, August story time, but we'll never forget J.R. Smith's last game. And the hat Jordan Clarkson was wearing at that time. Unbelievable stuff.
We'll talk about in August when we need to fill some space before training camp starts. But
yes,
I think Thompson, like again, this the Kyrie extension, maybe there's a little bit of sticker shock with it at first. I mean, especially because like this is a role player. This isn't like a bona fide star. This isn't a guy who wasn't an all-star for you. But like, was provided such a valuable thing to the Cavs, and I think more than proved his worth after he signed that extension, because he was integral in them winning the championship. He was integral in the 2016-17 Cavs, arguably like the greatest offensive basketball team of all time. Like Tristan was like the engine and the heart and soul of that team at times, because he gobbled up so many offensive boards, and in turn the Cavs could continue to be bombs away from three-point range. Like we saw what they did to the Hawks in the playoffs, and Tristan was the reason why they're able to do that. And he was slowed down a little bit and in LeBron's final years because of the Iron Man legacy and just Tristan having so much mileage on his body, and you saw him start to break down a little bit towards the end of that extension. But he became worth every penny in the end, and I think that's just like a guy who works hard and, like you said, is integral to your team's overall success, and then also just kind of proving it on the court like over the span of three-ish years, and then being a bit of a key locker room guy in the last 2 years of his deal as well. Like he was pretty important to the Cavs all the way through.
Yes, I would. This is one of those things that I think we have done, that in retrospect, as we're recording the seven Woj bomb, doesn't seem like Donovan Mitchell is totally off the table anymore, so that's
interesting. I made a face. I was just like, ooh, baby, that's a little spicy.
Yeah, so check out Locked On Jazz, I guess, if you want some insight on that or the other teams that might be wanting Donovan Mitchell, just to answer what people ask.
We're giving David Locke a quick screen assist. Go check out Locked On Jazz.
Yeah, go check out screen assist. The Cavs are not a Donovan Mitchell team, would be my guess. All right, after the break, though, let's talk about the Cavs and Colin Sexton being in the middle of all of this. And also, just like the Cavs, does it say anything about the Cavs that they haven't extended a lot of players in the last like 20 years?
We'll talk about that after the break. The number of non-extensions of their drafted players is still surprising to me. But yeah, we'll talk about that in a sec.
All right, back on Lockdown Cavs, Chris, Evan, you know the drill. So, Evan, let's start with the fact that they just haven't like drafted a lot of guys that they've kept, and it's not even like you hit on Kyrie. And, like, obviously, like, that worked out. You hit on Tristan, that worked out. But you missed on Deion. You missed on Anthony Bennett, obviously.
Wiggins was a miss until he got to Golden State.
But also, like, it's not a miss because, like, you traded him for Kevin Love when you got LeBron James and you won a title.
That's fair.
Yeah. But, like, I think the misses that stand out, it's like, you know, you end up dumping Tyler Zeller, who's a first-round pick. You dump Sergio Karasev, who's a first-round pick. Like, you missed on some of these later picks. And, like, that does matter. I think, ultimately, if we're looking at this, that stuff does ultimately matter, because even if some of those guys aren't on your best version of your team in a certain era, like, the Hawks have, like, they're going to re-sign Kevin Huerter. They're going to re-sign Okongwu. They did re-sign Kevin Huerter and then flipped him for something else. They're going to re-sign DeAndre Hunter, probably. Like, they're hitting on some other stuff. The Cavs just, like, kind of has, in the last, like, 20 years, like, have hit on LeBron, hit on Kyrie, hit on Tristan, and like those are the picks that like really matter until you get to Sexton and Garland and Mobley and maybe Okoro.
For context, the Cavs have a gulf in terms of picks during that LeBron era too, because as Brian
lots
Windhorst
of firsts
said,
they didn't have yeah
like as LeBron Windhorst said, LeBron doesn't care about first round picks. He'd rather maximize his potential now, and I think you saw a little bit of that, especially in his last year in Cleveland when they had that, you know, Brooklyn Nets pick that a lot of people were hoping would be like Luka Doncic, or it would be Trae Young, and I think the Cavs were hoping that too, and they ended up getting Colin Sexton, and still a hit at the 8th overall pick, just in historical context and just what he is and possibly still could be as a player. And just hits like Mobley was a hit. Garland, I think you could say, is a hit now because he is the highest paying contract in Cavs franchise history. Like, Darius Garland signed a bigger contract than LeBron ever did with the Cavs. I mean, granted, in the second era of Cavs, LeBron era, like, he kind of controlled that on his own. But nevertheless, like, this is a lot of money being committed to Darius Garland. And people say, like, oh, well, he's had one good year. He almost got the Cavs to a playoff situation. Like, yeah, but he's also just went absolutely bananas in nuclear his third year. So, yeah, we'll call that a hit. But Colin, and I'm trying to handle this delicately so the Hive doesn't get upset, is an interesting player when it comes to, like, signing him to an extension.
He's in the middle. He's in the middle.
He's in, like, a gray area where, like, he's not necessarily Tristan Thompson as, like, a role player where you can say, like, okay, clearly this guy is an integral piece to you winning on a night-to-night basis, and people can point out the fact that the Cavs weren't really trying to win in Sexton's early years, and, like, you can also make the argument against Sexton saying, like, empty stats on a bad team, a lot of somebody has to take those shots, et cetera, et cetera. But he could be important to what Cleveland is trying to build because there were a lot of instances, especially last season when they were kind of gunning for the playoffs, where like, people will point to Rubio falling down or going down for the season. Like, yes, that's a key part of this too, but Rubio was kind of coming back down to earth to his Minnesota numbers as well. So I take that with a glass half empty look, but there's times when the Cavs bog down offensively and you see Colin Sexton at the end of the bench just cheering on his teammates and trying to coach and hype everyone up the best of his ability. But you're like, man, if he was out there and he was able to get the Cavs a couple easy buckets, whether it's at the rim or whether it's at the line or whether it's just from three-pointers of Collins feeling like taking him that night, like, he could be, like, that connector piece a little bit, at least on offense, that could kind of make life easier for the rest of this Cavs team, which is why they went and got Caris LeVert, and it didn't work out with LeVert just because of injuries and things outside of the Cavs' control, but that's where it just gets kind of interesting because you can make an argument in that avenue saying, like, listen, the Cavs are a playoff team, but Colin could be the piece that helps push you over the edge to being a playoff team. But at the same time, like, how much money are you willing to commit to him? Are you going to commit, like, less than the max, but pretty darn close to it with Tristan Thompson? Absolutely not. But are you going to completely lowball and undersell him? I just think that's just the Cavs being frugal businessmen, and also the clutch side of things just refusing to blink and remaining steadfast in their arguments. So, like, it's a tricky situation. I still want to say the Cavs sign him to an extension, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. It's just kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, to me, when I think about this and I look at where we're at with the Sexton thing, it just feels like a new data point to me in the history of Cavs rookie negotiations, because this feels different than the Tristan thing. There's not a title window smack open right now where you just go all in. We also just, like, don't know exactly how, like, you can feel how you want about him, be optimistic about it, about him, and I think there's reason to be, right? We just don't know exactly how he fits in what worked last year. Like, we just don't. There's not data. No. There's not game tape deck. It is a guess. You are making a semi-educated guess on how he fits.
For context, again, J.B. Bickerstaff wasn't intentionally phasing him out of the offense, but the Cavs have found something that works between Garland, Mobley, and Allen, and you continue with that going forward. And now it's on the coaching staff and Colin to figure out his fit, and we unfortunately just don't have enough data on that fit in the new, like, Cavs offensive dichotomy, because he went down 11 games into the season, and in those 11 games, struggled at times from the floor, and, like, just didn't look himself, because we're used to seeing more of a ball-dominant guard, not a guy who's used to just primarily being off-ball in these situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this is, as we're going forward, I think this is going to continue to, I think, be a thing we're examining, because I think Okoro is heading this way. The money is not going to be as high, I don't think. No.
Unless Okoro has, like, a dramatic leap offensively, I don't think the money's going to be high.
But my point is that, like, I think, like, they have extended the very obvious ones.
Mm-hmm.
Garland, Mobley's going to be this way. Mobley's, like, the day they can offer Evan Mobley the 5-year rookie max, that contract is getting sent via email, fax machine, whatever it is, in whatever year that is. Yeah.
Mobley seems like the type of cat who would appreciate a carrier pigeon just pecking in his window.
Just
like
via
a raven from Game of Thrones. So, like, unpeels the scroll from the raven's leg, and he's like, okay. And then that's it.
I feel like, yeah, just, or like if they print out, like, the PD, like, whatever it is, that, like, that's going to happen. That's where this is headed with him. Okoro is just like, you could run this out in the same way to RFA and say, test the market, bro. Like Baji, like, might end up being really solid and you lock him up at a reasonable number, but, like, and it's too early to do this with him, but it's like, he's not going to be a guy that it's like very clear that he's worth the max. Like, that's just probably not what he's going
to
be.
We talked about it the other day. A scout said it to me, and I agree with this sentiment that, like, Abaji has the potential to be a guy where, like, a team could commit part of, if, or their entire mid-level exception to, like, they could pay him 9 to 10 million just as, like, currently he'd be like 9 to 10 million in the kind of situation, like, but like you said, not a max player.
Yeah, so, like, they, how they kind of handle some of the stuff, and Sexton is our first data point in this, I think it's really, really, really interesting. And there's just, again, like, there's not a, like, it just, I can't figure out, like, what exactly, right now, as we look at the market for this, Tristan's leverage play was, like, as, like, maybe the only roughly, and I don't even think it's perfect comparison with this. He had LeBron pushing for him back. They had no way to replace him. Chris Haynes reporting on the time was that they were leveraging the cap boom that was coming next summer, saying, like, we'll just go get a bigger offer next summer, and, like, trying to leverage that to kind of push up that number. I can't figure out, like, what the leverage play is for Sexton right now, and that puts him, like, that's, he's like an orange being squeezed, and, like, that is, I think, ultimately where this is at, and I can't think of a time where the Cavs have like, a so aggressively squeezed in this way.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
No, I think that is a fair way to put it. I'm just trying to, yeah, there's nowhere else way I want to put it. Like, I think that's a good way to kind of, like, just kind of, the discourse around this is going to be interesting. I think people are going to, like, break this down like a Zapruder film just because there's so much free time with the Cavs right now. But
go outside, read a book.
Go outside, touch grass, read a book, listen to some music, make some good food. Like, there's healthier ways to spend your time than arguing people online what Colin Sexton's worth. But again, not trying to upset his hive, but this will be an interesting study for the Cavs. Like, they have, these are kind of uncharted waters. They don't really extend their players after they draft them, and, like, people talk on the Knicks for it, but the Cavs are not much better. So
yeah, the Cavs' difference is they had Kyrie, LeBron, and Tristan, and they have Darius Garland now, and have Evan Mobley.
Yeah, but they have,
like, that's the difference. But they haven't.
But yeah, the Knicks have like Kemba Walker and stuff, man. That doesn't even count, but still.
Yeah, but, like, the Cavs didn't hit on the middle stuff. They've hit on the big stuff, and then this is, like, the new, not quite elite, but, like, pretty good, not sure how exactly to buy this. Sorry, that's this. I don't know if this was helpful to people, but to me this was interesting.
We're going
to
put a pin in this conversation and circle back to it if Colin does
this conversation has a pin in it until we get, like, any new data or any new reporting and guess what? I don't know where that's coming from right now. I don't know, like, what is going to twist this.
You and I have both heard it's a standoff right now. They're waiting to see who blinks first. And Clutch as an agency is very, very comfortable, as we know historically, with letting this drag out. Like, we didn't talk about the J.R. Smith situation, but that situation dragged out quite a bit, too. So
yeah, I mentioned on the Monday episode, we had an episode planned to maybe just do, like, the Cavs history with Clutch, and there just really wasn't enough meat to kind of grind out 30 minutes on this. There was enough on this bone to 30 minutes of meat of podcasting, which is, you know, a very delicious thing that I just said.
Chris is being carnivorous.
That's darn right. It is. All right. That is going to be it for today. Tomorrow, we're going to do a couple things. Number one, we're going to answer two questions about the upcoming Cavs season. We're going to do some, like, little looking ahead stuff as we kind of get out of free agency and think about team needs that we'll probably circle back to in the fall. Those questions for this first time of it: Caris LeVert's role, what is that exactly? And segment two, what is the return plan for Ricky Rubio? What does that look like and all of that? We're also going to talk about the in-season tournament and why it sucks, at least in my opinion. But until then, I'm Chris. That's Evan. Be well. Want a great second listen today? Go check out Locked on NBA. It'll help you get up to date on the latest news and rumors in the NBA in just 30 minutes. I bet you they're going to talk about Donovan Mitchell on the Wednesday show with Jake Madison and John Corrales. Locked on NBA is your daily NBA update in just 30 minutes. Check that out today. I'm Chris. That's Evan.